it's not just a small pocket of nurses who face these complications with patients with pain management. I think it's a very broad theme across all of nursing.
I'm Christiana Facey Crowther, and I'll be your nurse. Pain. It is interwoven with healthcare. Managing pain is a big part of what I do every day, and it is not simple. There's a high level of skill and expertise required to do it well, and a continually evolving knowledge base, especially as the public's expectations for safe and effective pain management increase. I feel like with each shift, my awareness grows of how much of the responsibility for pain management, especially in a hospital setting, rests with nursing. It's a major part of how our organizations evaluate the quality of the care we provide. More importantly, it really matters to patients and families who put their trust in us. And while the volume of guidelines and evidence grows, the kind of information that is directly applicable to my bedside practice, the complexity of the patients I'm working with, coordinating the efforts of a team of professionals, that kind of information is harder to find. But I'm going to search for it. And so pain will be a recurring theme here at the bedside, as it is in practice. And we start today with Jacqueline Ritchie, nurse practitioner and pain specialist. She shares some of her knowledge and lends some language for approaching challenging presentations. Since recording this a few months ago, I have integrated Jacqueline's approach to functional pain management, and it has been immensely helpful. I hope you find something she says here helpful, as I did.
So welcome to At the Bedside. Thanks for being here, Jacqueline.
Thanks for having me.
So I thought we could start with just, why don't you just describe in your own words, what is your role right now?
Well, my current role is a nurse practitioner under the Department of Anesthesia with the Acute Pain Service, with a team of anesthesiologists and a part-time pharmacist and a nurse practitioner colleague. We facilitate pain management for patients, surgical patients, after surgery, until we can transition them with optimum pain control back to their surgical services. And this also includes following non-surgical patients who might have complex pain syndromes.
So can you give us a sense of your nursing career and starting from when you entered the nursing profession and what drew you towards where you are now?
Sure. Well, I first started on a surgical inpatient floor and nursed there for several years. A majority of the reasons why you're called to the bedside will be for pain in the post-surgical population. So my interest in managing patient pain well facilitated from my bedside training and how to predictably manage their pain with what I was ordered and the other therapies that I had available to me as a nurse. So that's where my interest in pain first spurred from. Just knowing how to prevent the patient from even getting to that point where they'd have to call me for pain because I could help them manage it before they got to that acute phase. And then went into my advanced practice role for my master's of nursing and the nurse practitioner degree in acute care for adults. And then an opportunity just arose upon my graduation for an acute pain service nurse practitioner position. And I applied for the job, was a lucky candidate, and then it facilitated me into this next role of advanced practice nursing, where prescribing some of those medications and therapies and treatments became the next step into facilitating patients' pain management at a different level, but also supporting my nursing colleagues in building education and awareness about how to manage patients' pain well.
Excellent. I think we all understand as nurses that having your patient in acute, unmanaged pain is terrible. We all hate pain. Patients don't like it. They're very vocal about not liking it, and they should be. But can you describe a little bit why it is such a concern and what are the ramifications of uncontrolled pain for patients?
Absolutely. So as you pointed out, first and foremost, nobody likes the idea of suffering themselves or watching another patient suffer or another person suffer. So just on an altruistic type level, something we want to help with, right? So there's the physiological complications that could already occur when acute post-op pain isn't relieved very well. post-op complications where patients won't move well or even try and ambulate with you. So then all those complications with post-op pneumonia, DVTs occurring, all becomes part of that acute post-op pain management. It all fall within there to help aid those post-op complications not happening. Mm-hmm. And there's the psychological effect that it has on patients when their pain isn't well managed. Pain is definitely not only something that you experience physically, but also emotionally, psychologically. And we see a lot of patients who have chronic diseases that will have multiple post-surgical stays, multiple admissions to hospital. And when pain isn't managed well on one occasion, what does that mean in ramifications for them for further interventions in hospital?
Sort of like anxiety, you mean?
Absolutely. In terms of even a, I know we use a lot of the term in terms of post-traumatic stress disorder, but a lot of patients are now using that term for their surgical post-op courses as well because of the level of anxiety that they've experienced in the past because of not well-treated acute pain and how that plays into their recovery process. And then there's obviously the transition from acute pain that's not managed well into a chronic pain syndrome, which is absolutely something that we want to try and prevent from happening in the first place. And the ramifications for patients and families and society in general for managing chronic pain becomes this whole other burden on itself.
And that can be a result of just truly, like, if you control acute pain postoperatively, we know that that does limit the development of chronic pain.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Absolutely. So the I think one of the ideas for why acute pain services are being developed in some of the bigger hospitals, especially the academic hospitals, is that we know that we can prevent chronic pain if we have a specialized team that can manage acute pain in within their admission stay. So while that might not be available everywhere in the larger tertiary hospitals, that's where a lot of funding has come into to try and prevent chronic pain.
And as a member of that team, mm-hmm. and as a nurse, can you just describe why you think it's really important to have a nurse as a member of that team?
Absolutely. I think the nurses bring to the table a little bit more of a holistic conversation because we have a nursing model. We are educated in a nursing model, which helps us transition our patients. When you work with other team members and stakeholders in the group that practice in a medicine model, for instance, their expertise is strategy and the value is in one area. Mm-hmm. Nursing has kind of that languaging that can actually take that and bring it on with the patient once that other health professional's intervention with that patient ends, mm-hmm. and where it follows. So I find as a nurse, expanding that acute pain management teaching has an opportunity from learning from the other stakeholders and the other allied health professionals, and then bringing that language back to the patient and putting it in a form that in language that the patient can understand or the family can understand, and being that constant touch point that they can always go back to, because it usually is the nurse or the frontline nurse or somebody in the nursing profession that they have access to more availably, more readily in the hospital.
Oh yeah.
And also can also speak to the language of which the patient can understand, and also be an avenue for the patient to bring back those questions if they don't have the answers. And the model of following the patient throughout their course and how to hand them over to the next healthcare professional to continue on with what they need.
And when you talk about handing over, is that because you understand the actual physical day-to-day function of the nursing role, who is providing the education and actually providing the pain management and doing so much of the teaching? Is that what you mean by that? Handover?
That's a portion of it in terms of the handover, but I think what my advanced practice role has really taught me is that I know where the patient has to go next. I know the family physician or the family healthcare practitioner in the community is the next touch point once the patient leaves my care.
Oh, I see. You're thinking so, like even post-discharge. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, when I say along the journey, it's pre-op to inpatient stay to post-op course to how I'm going to send the patient home and what avenue and resources I can have in place for that patient before they leave. And then also if there's further communication to the people in the community to help continue to support the patient.
As you said, nursing, we spend a lot of time providing education. And of course, education, you cannot teach a patient who is in uncontrolled pain. Mm-hmm. It's a total barrier to, like, retaining information.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
So even to get to the point where you can provide teaching, we need to have pain managed. And as nurses, we are providing the analgesia, so much of the education. So now that we have you here as a resource, I wonder if I can ask you some questions about some scenarios, some more complex scenarios that have arisen in my own practice recently.
Absolutely.
So one of, as you mentioned, you're talking about chronic pain. And one of the things, as you said, it's extremely distressing for patients, but it's also, as the nurse, especially kind of outside of the times when perhaps you or some of the other team members are available, like at night, for example. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you receive someone from the operating room later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got some orders in place, and you provide them with what's available, their analgesia, and you're finding, man, this person is in uncontrolled pain. I've given everything I can.
Mm-hmm.
They're jumping off the bed. They're explaining how much pain they have. So sometimes I wonder, what's the next step now? I've registered they're in uncontrolled pain. I've done my assessment. I don't see any serious complication that's glaring as a reason to need more intervention. It just looks like they've had surgery and or whatever they've come in with, and they have serious pain. How would you approach that patient and perform an appropriate assessment to move on to the next step?
Okay. It's a great question. And I can say from my own bedside experience as a registered nurse that that's also a very common occurrence to happen.
It's an emergency.
Absolutely. Acute pain crises should be dealt as an emergency. Some clinical advice in terms of that patient situation would be, yes, give as much in terms of the therapy to get them to a state where at least you can have a conversation and do and complete your focused pain assessment. Mm-hmm. But then also there might be some history taking that might have been missed. And commonly asking a patient about their previous use. We all wish that our patients have gone through the pre-admit process, or perhaps it was an emergency case basis, right, where they come in from eMERGE and go right into OR. It's getting a patient history about what was their recent use, right? And sometimes it's just because we're missing a key piece of information about the patient's history in terms of pain management and pain control, drug therapy, illicit drug use, sometimes is a missing piece that we didn't have when we put in the initial orders. Sometimes getting that history when you call back the physician team or the surgical team for some assistance with treating the acute pain is another aspect that will aid to changing orders and changing treatment.
Okay.
Many times I found that stigmatism to having opioid use disorder or admitting to having illicit drug use or any kind of addiction, patients might not be as willing to disclose that information on the onset of whatever is happening before they have surgery. But sometimes re-asking that question in a very non-judgmental manner and with the expectation that I'm trying to help you manage this acute pain, but I need to know if there's anything that I don't know, and having a non-judgmental conversation that sometimes just opens up some other aspects of the patient's history that would be ideal to know before setting a treatment plan forward. And absolutely, part of the nursing education right now is how do we empower nurses to feel that they can page the team to come and help them manage an acute pain crisis. And treating to the max, giving as many PRN pain medications that you can, following the multimodal approach that's given to you or whatever is ordered. And how do you feel empowered enough as a nurse to do a good assessment and page back the team and try and get more adequate orders?
And of course, I always try to keep in mind that, at night, especially, during the day, it's a bit different, but not always. It could be any time of day. Tend to rely on the other professional to come and do an assessment, but there's a lot of times in the day when it's not available and you need to rely on your own assessment skills and being the one who is there and present, and maybe you're going to be the go-between. But I guess if you're lost or if you've tried to do an assessment and you're wondering and the person's not available, the other health professional, you can always ask them, guide me, help me get some language around what I should be asking, and I'll go collect a thorough history and then I'll return.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's also relaying back to the other healthcare provider. I've maxed out the doses that you've provided me, but also ensuring them, this is what I've given, oral, IV, multimodal, and listing for them exactly what you've given in order to prompt them to see the seriousness of the situation. sometimes you telling them you just gave one dose isn't going to be enough of a premise for somebody to think, oh, this is something, a crisis that I need to urgently attend to. But sometimes giving them the context and the background of what you've maximized will really help them, persuade them to say, okay, this is something that needs more urgent attention.
Yeah, it's really those patients who, for me, who have a history, I find, in those situations, it typically ends up being that it's somebody who has a history maybe of chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go back and say, hey, have you been having pain for a long time, like mm-hmm. even before this? And then trying to figure out how to better manage them. And it takes time, and it's really, really stressful for
Absolutely.
Them and for you as the care provider. It brings to mind a recent clinical encounter that I had with a patient who had a chronic inflammatory bowel disease.
Mm-hmm.
And she was relating to me postoperatively in the acute phase where she was in uncontrolled pain. And through discussion with her, she started to relate that she'd been to Emerge preoperatively a number of times at another center, and that she felt that nobody believed her that she was in pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was difficult for me. It raised my attention that this is a person who had been, denied pain control. Maybe I don't want to judge any other healthcare provider. I'm not there. It's not something I want to do. But that this person had maybe faced judgment around her seeking pain medication.
Mm-hmm.
So when you encounter a patient with a history of maybe opioid use or mistrust of revealing their opioid use, how do you establish that trust? I mean, it's easy to say establish trust, but what kind of language do you use? How do you talk to that patient?
I spend a lot of time dealing with, or just discussing, not dealing with, but discussing with the patient expectations about pain management. What I am going to be able to provide for them in the short term versus the long term, and versus what they've experienced before, but also coming across very non-judgmental in trying to elicit those facts about what their previous use or history or addictions or just previous experiences were, so that I understand where their anxiety or their what might be hindering us building a therapeutic relationship. So a lot of it is just languaging it very non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to use a lot of the jargon that we're used to having, which can sometimes come across very judgmental to the patient. And sometimes it's just having an open dialogue about what I can realistically provide in that moment. Sometimes it's, if I'm dealing with an acute pain crisis, what I can give, how often I can give it, in the increments that I can give it, and what my aim is to do. And sometimes it's just reminding them that I can't take your pain all away, and that's not the aim of what I can do right now. And trying to get them to an understanding where we can get them down to a level of pain that's at least acceptable, but finding that level of acceptance for the patient and for what you are giving as the nurse or the healthcare providers is sometimes doesn't match. But it's building relationship over time about where you can meet that expectation somewhat in the middle. It is very difficult, acute on chronic pain, but I think the development of all these guidelines has really said that all these situations are happening for all healthcare providers, and trying to give us some structure and guidance about how to deal with it has really been across the board.
I like that you talked about the goals, because sometimes I find I'll come in to assess a patient with post-op pain, and I'll be asking them at the start of shift, I'm just meeting them, how's your pain controlled? And they'll say, if I just stay completely still, exactly like this, I'm totally fine. How do you respond to that?
That's a great question, because I get that too when I do my patient assessments as well. It's also talking about functional pain and languaging about what the patient's expectations of what they're going to do today might be, and how our pain management and the therapies and interventions we're trying to provide are going to help them meet those goals, and trying to realistically lead them to say, we know that you have no pain when you're lying still, but the expectation for today is that we are going to move for many reasons, and list some of those reasons, and try and get some buy-in from the patients to understand that part of the mobilization today is important for my recovery. and give them options about what you're going to do in order to help them with achieving adequate pain management so they can meet their functional goals for today. And sometimes you just need to start little with turning and repositioning in the bed with adequate pain relief.
Coughing,
deep breathing, and then just moving forward from there. It's getting those little wins and the buy-ins from the patient that sometimes lead to the bigger steps later down in the shift. But sometimes it's setting that expectation as the acute pain nurse and knowing that the language that the nurse is giving matches that. And the language that the physicians are giving or the surgical team on rounds is giving matches that same expectation. So that the patient starts to hear repetitive education about what functional pain management should be like, mm-hmm. and whether or not they can reach those goals and how they're going to work with the teams to try and achieve the goals. It's more of what can we do together to get you to do A, B, or C, and less of you need to do this, this, and this.
That's
but
a great
I think
point.
It is a lot about therapeutic relationships and building enough trust as the nurse at the bedside and as the team in general to help that patient know that the goal is to get me up and moving with appropriate amount of pain control, with the expectation that it's not going to be perfect, but I think it has to come from all team members and the patient accepting that that is a realistic goal.
And then when you say functional pain, something that brings to mind for me as well is that functional pain requires that the person be in touch with their own internal feeling of pain and that they start to pay attention to that and then to call for or use pain medication at the appropriate time. And sometimes I find that we may expect that people will have a sense of when they should take it, and when their pain is increasing, but that's not always the case.
Absolutely, yeah.
If I explore with some patients or when they're using their, either their patient-controlled analgesia or when they're calling, some of the times they're giving me a time frame based on the clock.
Absolutely, yeah.
So how do you support patients to start to think about it as a physical sensation?
Well, first of all, your insight is correct. Like, everyone's insight towards when and how and what they call for is going to be different. It's having that insight into your own patient to understand what exactly is their level of appropriate pain. Because that can fluctuate throughout the day and the circumstance and everything in between. But sometimes it is a lot of repetition.
Yeah.
It is. How many times do you have to repeat it before they start to understand what the functional pain aspect is? And I think that goes back to what I was saying was start with a small, very tangible pain goal in terms of deep breathing and coughing, for instance, and use that as the marker. Like, was that tolerable? Use that as the baseline for them to say, was that an adequate enough pain management level for you that you would be able to do more? And then use levels like that to say, when you're at a level that was similar to when we were doing that exercise, that is about the level where I anticipate you should call for pain management because it's stopping you from doing more or doing what you were wanting to achieve in terms of a functional goal. But sometimes you have to lead them back to a baseline. And sometimes I think postoperatively, for many reasons, patients can't find that baseline quickly. And that's where I think as nurses, we have a very key element to helping patient realize, you know, what are my expectations and what can I adequately manage?
How about if a patient says to you, but aren't these addictive? Am I going to get addicted to these? There is so much in the news about opioid and the dangers of opioids.
So absolutely. And I've been hearing that more and more as the weeks go by. You can just hear that increasing question just because of all the media attention with the opioid crisis. But I think it's also part of patient expectations and your expectations about what you're providing for them. And sometimes having a discussion about why acute pain is so important to manage in the beginning and that it's a very short-term course in terms of if your pain is managed well, as you heal, it will start to decrease, right? And sometimes people also ask because they have had a history of addictions to other things or have known somebody with an addiction history. And sometimes just exploring that, what does that mean to that patient in terms of their fear of relapsing or just fear because they've seen it happen to somebody else that they love or in the community. And just exploring to them what that situation was for that person and how it applies to their circumstance. if there is an opioid use disorder history or an addictions history in that patient, then it's what other resources or what can we do within our current plan to help facilitate if you start to hit those risk factors, if you start to feel worried and genuinely worried that you're falling back into another path, what can we do to support that patient? Because those patients exist, right?
They do.
But it's, first of all, it's understanding what that concept is to that patient in terms of why am I afraid of addiction? Is it a realistic risk for me? But that's in understanding your patient and actually having a conversation to begin with.
I think there's a lot of mixed messages out there about the risks of addiction. And mm-hmm. that will bring us to talk a little bit about your next role mm-hmm. that you're moving into. Mm-hmm. But it used to be when I graduated from nursing school that pain is whatever the patient says, and as long as you're using opioids to manage pain, there's no risk of addiction. Mm-hmm. Is that still the message, or is it a little bit more nuanced?
I think we've swung the pendulum from one sense where we treat it so aggressively and opioids were the first choice, whereas now it's swinging the other direction where opioids are now not being so freely prescribed for acute pain without the conjunction of a multimodal approach in terms of different types of medications to control pain as a first-line therapy other than opioids. So we're finding that fine swing in the pendulum about how to prescribe medication for acute pain. Mm-hmm. But absolutely, it's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. So you are moving into a new position. Mm-hmm. Do you want to describe that a little bit?
Sure. An opportunity existed for a new nurse practitioner role to open to facilitate some opioid stewardship work that's being promoted within the hospital. And it's the transitional pain service role, which will have me transition from acute care pain management to transitional care pain management, which is trying to circumvent that movement from acute pain not being well managed to preventing chronic pain from happening. So I've noticed in my current position that after we've signed off on patients from the acute pain service, that there sometimes is a very large gap for some very complex patients, but even standard patients who were opioid naive, transitioning back to the community or being discharged, where additional help and resources was needed to help that patient come off of either A, their high doses of opioids, or even their low doses of opioids, and tapering them off as the healing occurred, and also an opportunity to transition some of those more complex patients out into back into the community and provide the community healthcare professionals with some further support for those more complex patients mm-hmm. in regards to more specialized follow-up to optimize their pain management. For those patients, as we talked about, that had chronic pain as well, who are sometimes our more complex patients who come in for acute surgery, it gives another avenue for support for those community healthcare professionals that will have to support that patient just post-surgically, another resource for them to fall back on that's provided as part of the transitional pain service.
So who's referring to you?
So it can come from either the acute pain service itself upon transition off their service. It can be any of the surgical services as well. We're going to have an avenue through the eMERGE department for any of those post-surgical patients that come in through readmission that are worked up and not found to have any other medical reason for coming in. It's just not well-controlled pain mm-hmm. post-surgically. And there might be a little bit of a mixture of some support within the organization for complex pain syndromes and perhaps a little bit of addictions will always kind of overlap a little bit in that in case there's somebody who has complex pain and an addictions history and is admitted with for pain management.
That's got to be a very challenging situation for patients as well if you mm-hmm. have uncontrolled pain or if you have chronic complex pain. And I think we're starting to get a better sense that those two things can coexist, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
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 So you also have, beyond your clinical work, you have a leadership role in the hospital on a council that you serve on, is that right? The Pain Stewardship
yes.
Committee?
So I co-chair the Opioid Safety Committee, okay. Which was kind of, now with our hospital's quality improvement plan, has kind of been embedded into the pain strategy altogether, so that it's on the quality improvement plan across the organization. But my main focus on the Opioid Safety Committee is to provide opioid stewardship in terms of how to reduce opioid-related harms across the organization and strategies that we can bring together as a multidisciplinary group to try and reduce those opioid-related harms.
And how would you characterize those harms? Like, what are the opioid-related harms? I mean, I think we see some of them.
Yes, and then it's a big catchment group. So we actually formalized it into different pillars of what we can provide to prevent some of those harms. And some of them are just taking some of the multitude of guidelines that are out there and all the new research about how to treat opioid use disorder, acute pain, chronic pain. So we've really taken the Health Quality Ontario guidelines for prescribing opioids in general and kind of embedded that into the work for direct clinical support was one of the pillars and all a bunch of quality initiatives under that. And then there's the monitoring and safeguarding. So where topics such as divergence, whether it's staff diverging opioids or patients' divergence of opioids as well, and how that whole monitoring and managing controlled substances in the hospitals kind of falls under. Mm-hmm. And then there's another section that's just patient and staff education. So there's just so many buckets that it has to oversee in order to make a big enough culture change and adopt as a strategy across the organization. We really do try and mimic those same buckets that as the federal and provincial approaches in terms of to how they're doing their opioid stewardship as well and how they're putting out resources and information for the general population about how they're trying to reduce opioid harms in the community and across the nation. So we're trying to really mimic those and bring them into our hospital strategy, that how we can leverage some of the work that's being done outside politically and also how we tailor it to our patient population and to our needs in the hospital itself.
Well, that sounds simple.
It's a bigger task than I thought in general, but it's part of the learning opportunity, I think, as an advanced practice nurse to be sitting on a stakeholder committee group like that, that I feel that I can make more tangible effects than just when I have patients in my clinic or seeing on a day-to-day. It's how I can bring some of that bedside expertise and the gaps that I know at the bedside and how to build policy and infrastructure and an opportunity to make changes at a higher level to support the gaps that I'm seeing in practice. So it's a good merge of the work I'm trying to help with.
We talk a lot on the unit about, you know, patients, the way we collect data and evaluate our own nursing care in terms of patient satisfaction with their pain control, but also their satisfaction with how well they're educated about pain control upon discharge and during their stay. And we, as the care providers, as you described, who spend so much time with the patient, we talk a lot about, you and I, the importance of the nursing role as an educator, as a someone who can help the patient learn more about how to manage their pain.
Absolutely.
And you see a lot of potential there, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think we need to leverage that relationship that already exists between nurses and their patients and just that opportunity that exists at the bedside on a day-to-day basis while they're here, but how we actually push that strategy through to make that part of the culture of nursing is needs support from the whole organization. There are multiple initiatives always on the go that require the nurses to learn something new, teach their patients about it and teach themselves about it. But I think a lot of the work that we're trying to do as a committee is how do we standardize the approach to leverage this opportunity. Part of my nursing voice at that committee is promoting this, saying we need to leverage this. How can we leverage this? How can we build this into orientation for new nurses? How can we build competency for existing nurses? What forums exist? Can we build it into education budgets? And trying to vie for those multiple, you know, multiple initiatives that are going through, how do we make this a corporate priority?
And also, I mean, thinking about nursing time.
Exactly.
How do
we leverage that?
Make this one of the multiple demands.
Exactly. And what novel approaches can we use to facilitate giving the nurses some of this information that might be outside of our normal models of e-modules or huddles or how we disseminate the information. What are some new ways that we need to think of in terms of educating our nurses about common nursing practices that we need to become more empowered about?
How about podcasts?
Less pain. Exactly. Just like podcasts. What exists out there to get us to get the message across in a more tangible way for nurses to readily access? Because I think it's not just a small pocket of nurses who face these complications with patients with pain management. I think it's a very broad theme across all of nursing. So I think there needs to be other ways to educate one another and to support one another.
And to be aware of what sometimes it seems like you can identify that a patient needs something and you're thinking, I don't know if that exists. I see the need, but the support maybe is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an extremely frustrating situation to
Absolutely.
Be in. Disheartening.
One of the other things I did want to add, though, is as new and novel approaches, such as the transitional pain service, get built and developed, I think another part of that communication strategy will have to include what specialty services exist. Because I think that also, the access to care, the resources, like as an APN and as a nurse practitioner, one of my components is supposed to be leadership and advocacy for access to care. And I feel like this new role with transitional pain service is providing healthcare providers and patients with another resource to help them manage their pain better.
Mm-hmm. And more safely.
And safely, absolutely, with an outcome that everybody wants in terms of less medication use, you know, better functional pain, just resilience in terms of coping with pain. But I think we also need to communicate that well, how to refer well, where to refer to. I think some of that communication about where to go and where to turn when you feel like pain management is inadequate.
I like the way you said coping with pain, because sometimes I've noticed if a patient feels that they're not, if we sometimes just offering reassurance, hey, we're going to get there. Mm-hmm. We're working. We're going to get there. We'll mm-hmm. help you manage your pain. You're not being ignored. I see such a component of anxiety in pain management.
Absolutely.
You see that too?
Yeah. I would absolutely say yes. It's not just the physiological effect. I think a lot of that just has a very big anxiety component as well.
So just to close our conversation here, Jacqueline, I wonder if there's a nurse out there who, or any other healthcare provider who's interested in expanding their knowledge about pain management, can you recommend any resources online or in person or otherwise that might be helpful?
Sure. First and foremost, I would recommend just reviewing the Health Quality Ontario guidelines. There are three separate guidelines for treating acute pain, and one would be in opioid use disorder, chronic pain, and then just generally prescribing for acute pain. And I found these guidelines very helpful, very user-friendly, very adaptable to all patient populations, and kind of gives you the background context about why it's a national approach to why they're supporting proper prescribing and pain management practices. I would also recommend, I just completed an RNAO free e-module about opioid use disorder as well and how to support patients with that. I found it through the RNAO website, and I actually found that one very informative and just gave a nice general background into what you can expect as challenges and what are some of the resources that are available, and even some of the languaging in terms of how you speak to patients if that is part of their history. So I found that very helpful as well.
Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Here's a tricky one. Mm-hmm. If you were going, you have unlimited budget. This is a fantasy. This is a healthcare fantasy. And if you were going to design a study to answer a question you have about pain, what might you decide? Or if somebody was doing it, you know, what question do you have that you'd like to see an answer to?
I would probably say if I had unlimited funds, I would put unlimited funds towards targeted therapy based on your genetics in terms of what pain medications would work best. Because I find like we sometimes filter through a lot of trial and error in terms of pain medications and then also side effects that people get. So maybe that's going too wide and extreme.
No, that's fascinating.
But getting to the stage where we could target it towards an individual's genetic disposition for what they would tolerate well.
That's true. I find sometimes we talked about the history and the uncontrolled pain, mm-hmm. sometimes just switching the analgesic, for example, between Absolutely. Morphine and hydromorphone makes a massive difference, even at an equivalent dose.
Yes, all those little nuances, but are very patient-specific. I mean, if we're trying to do patient-specific therapy, which is what we try and do with what we have now, the arsenal that we have now, wouldn't it be great to just be able to do one pinprick and find genetically what would work best for one patient without having to guess or go through trial and error, and to minimize the other harms from medication side effects that might happen if we could just target the few that we would know that would work best. So if I could do that and do it patient-tailored, specific pain management, then I think that's where I'd put my money and research on.
Well, thank you so much, Jacqueline. Thanks for meeting with me and talking with me and sharing your expertise on At the Bedside.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This season of At the Bedside is possible because of funding and protected time. So thank you to Sinai Health System and the RNAO's Advanced Clinical Practice Fellowship. And thank you, as always, to the amazing nurses and staff of the 14th floor. At the Bedside podcast is on Instagram and Twitter. Please subscribe wherever you podcast, and don't forget, if you didn't document, you didn't do it. So please rate and comment. The algorithms notice that kind of thing.